listening to the Unnamed Movie Podcast, the official podcast of G-Man Reviews. Today, not only are we not joined by Damien, but in his
place... We are drinking.
Yes, we have some Bavaria Special Blonde Beer.
7.9%.
Or 7.9% if you're in Europe.
And it's from Holland.
Exactly. So, here, here. Oh, wait. One
awesome.
More. Come on. One more. Now that that's over with, we can begin the show. As we said already, Damien is not here today. So today it's me, Douglas, and Andrew to my right.
Hi.
Which you can see now because we are on video.
Yeah, if you're listening live, which...
Yes, then again, if you're listening late, sorry. You just missed a very great moment in television history.
But we're not on TV.
Damn it.
I mean, we're still waiting for the deal to go through. I mean, NBC has offered us something.
Yeah, but I think we need to hold out.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we can hold out, like, what's this dude's name in The Office?
Which one is that, Michael? Yeah. The boss?
The boss.
Michael.
I don't watch The Office, so I don't know.
I love The Office, so I do know. Anyway, so yes, this is the show. You are listening to it or watching it, depending on where you are at this moment in time. But right now, we are going to talk about... Well, actually, I have a question to pose to you, Andrew. We were going to talk about Carib. Are we still talking
about... No, we're not going to talk about Carib, because I want to save that for when Damien is here, because he has a really good story to tell. And I want that to be, like, the catalyst to the Carib
discussion. Okay, well, I guess then what we're going to do is we're going to start off talking about an article that Damien, who is not here...
Yeah, this is Damien's show.
This is really Damien's show, and again, the last time Damien had his show with Quid Pro Quo, he left us out, you know, in the dark with nothing, not even our clothes on. And tonight,
I'd like to think I had my clothes on.
No, you had on a pair of socks. That doesn't really count. But yeah, tonight he's done the same thing. He's left us, you know, we're reviewing a movie he wanted to review. We were going to talk about something he wanted to talk about. So it's just us. So we're going to say, you know what, screw it. We're going to talk about what we want to talk about. And so...
I'm totally going to be eating chips and drinking beer throughout the podcast. So when you hear all these strange noises, like I'm sure the mic is picking me up, crunching this chip. Please, I do not apologize.
At least finish eating before you speak so we can understand you. Anyway, I am going to talk now, and I'm going to talk about this BBC article that came out a while back about romantic comedies.
Actually came out last year.
Exactly, a while back. It depends on how you define a while, okay?
Bear.
Romantic comedies are the death of us. There has been a study that says that people are less likely to do well in relationships because they believe that everything should be perfect. And that communication is not needed, that your partner, if he or she is the one, will know you and will know what you want without you having to tell them what you want, and therefore it will work out perfectly, smoothly, wonderfully, without any, you know, hard work. And that just isn't the reality. That's all that's on TV. And so, essentially, romantic comedies destroy our love lives. So what do you have to say about that?
Excuse me. romantic comedies destroy love lives. Like, I mean, I think my first problem with this idea is the fact that it stupefies the world to the point that it thinks we believe everything the movie tells us.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, anyone who goes to a Freddy Krueger film and says, oh, that's based on a true story, of course... That shit can really happen. You know, that dude is just too retarded. And of course, when he watches romantic comedies, of course, he's going to have this expectation of romance and relationships. So, of course, his love life is completely ruined. But for the rest of the world, come on.
I agree with you there. But it's not unbelievable that somebody might, you know, take that tack. They actually did a proper study. They showed, you know, some romantic comedies. I can't remember if it was a specific one or a group of them. I think they were looking at, you know, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Love Actually. Essentially the big boys that came out in the 90s and the early 2000s. early zeros, early thousands. It's very hard to say that. Anyway, you know what I mean, guys. They were focusing on those romantic comedies, and they gave, you know, one group those movies to watch, or one of those movies to watch or something, and then they gave a group, or another group, a movie to watch that was directed by my favorite director who I've never actually seen anything from, David Lynch. And
I was about to ask, I hope they had another group in which all they did was show Predator and Rambo and see what happens with them.
Yes, and there were some results. I don't remember the results, but I'm sure they backed up the whole thesis. So,
or they wouldn't have published the article.
Exactly. And honestly, it's not, you know, I don't think that this is 100% false. I think that, you know, the stigma, not the stigma, the main thesis or points of most of these romantic comedies are that, you know what, yes, you might be having problems with love now. Yes, your life might not be what you want it to be, but in the end, it's going to turn out great. And if you watch enough of those, first of all, you're watching those movies because, you know, either you like it, you're into that kind of movie, or you actually have that feeling. We tend to be drawn towards movies that are portraying a certain aspect of life that we want to see or we want to happen. So,
of course, yes, I want Zooey Deschanel.
I know, but what I'm saying is that if you want to believe that this is so, that you will find the perfect person for you and you will, you know, fall in love head over heels and it will just happen, then you will gravitate towards these movies and maybe it might push you even more along the lines that you've already started thinking. So I could see this making sense that, you know, the more you're inclined to watching romantic comedies, the more you're inclined to think that this sort of thing can happen and hopefully will happen to you. And so if you think that, you know, you're going to find the right one and the right one will just know, and you won't have to, you know, do all of this relationship work, then, yeah.
You know what? I think I know how I'm going to approach this, mm-hmm. right? The movie formula.
Right? You believe in formulas now?
Well, no. However, well, I guess I do. I don't want to.
Points to double.
But I do. I ignore it whenever I'm actually watching a movie.
You don't ignore it. You just can't see it. And you get upset when other people do. Right. So you try and pretend like you see
it. Right? Out of all of the genres that exist in this world, the romantic comedy has one of the most easily noticeable formulas. Right? It starts out with a guy or a girl. Actually, you know what? I don't think I've watched a romantic comedy in which the girl is the main focus. It's usually the guy getting the girl.
27 Dresses.
Okay, alright. Alright. Guy or girl is person in drought of life. You know, they're in a rut of their day-to-day schedule, whether they hate it or they love it or whatever. Other person, you know, guy or girl, you know, figure out your connection, whichever way you like it. Meet. And then that person takes them out of this rut into the heaven of life. You know, all the wonderful things. They show them the other side of town that they were too lazy to go and drive over to. You know? And then after a while, they have a hiccup because the girl or guy finds out that the protagonist had some deep secret which was tied to their meeting or tied to their personality or whatever, right? And then they have 5 to 10 minutes of people sulking, and then after those 5 to 10 minutes are over, they get back together and wonderful things happen. The world is perfect again and they get together for good, or mm-hmm. so we hope.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I kind of think. Imagine if films took the entire world into scope. If they, like, films always take us from point A to point B, you know, over the space of a day, a week, a month, a year. What if they took us over a lifetime? Right? For these romantic comedies, it's always that short period of time. I want to find out about the dirty fights that they have at the end of this film. Like 3 months later when they're bored with each other.
Yeah.
You know, I don't... These things need to be shown. However, romantic comedies, you're talking about how they give people, like, unfair expectations. Right? And I spoke about that already, about how people need to stop being retarded and realize this is a movie.
You're sounding more and more like Damien every day. Cheers.
Well, I mean, I have to pick up the slack. I'm not saying I don't enjoy the film. You know, I'm one of those people who decides that, yes, I know this is fake, but I'm going to enjoy the shit out of it. Just like how I loved Crank 2. Like, anyone who watches Crank 2 and says, oh, I'm going to go outside and get a fake heart and I'm going to grab a car and tie it to my tongue and my nipple and make sure that it charges. You know, it's it's just not something that we need to be talking about in a serious sense. Which is the same thing with romantic comedies. They're sweet, they're cute, they're cuddly. They have a couple jokes in there. Nowadays, they get a bit crude thanks to Judd Apatow. Right? Which is why I think I love romantic comedies. I think it's the greatest compromise. A romantic comedy. You're taking your girl out for a date. She wants to see Pretty in Pink. You want to watch Knocked Up. Holy shit, why not just go to Yes Man or something else of that nature? I can't think of another romantic comedy. I'm talking in the
you,
moment.
You messed up. You should have said, you want to watch Pretty in Pink? She wants to, or he, you want to watch something really manly like Rambo, and then you go to Knocked Up. Knocked Up is the middle. Knocked Up is not an extreme.
What oh, are you yeah. talking about? Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It's the bear. It's the bear, people. It's the bear. As I take another sip. The thing is that it's just one of those genres that I don't take seriously at all. I just, it's a first date. Is what it is. It's a time when you don't know anyone that well. You think she's kind of cute. You think to yourself, yeah, kind of interesting. So you deal with her. But
what are you doing on your first date?
No, it's the bear.
You have to teach me something.
It's the bear. I mean, you're just going through the random questions, the stupid questions, like when's your birthday kind of questions, and you're just getting to know the girl. While films that go further, other films like Synecdoche, New York, takes you through the entire life, takes you through the entire time that you're with this girl. So romantic comedies is your first date. And I don't mean that your first date is when you take your girl to the romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. I mean the romantic comedy is the movie version of a first date.
Mm-hmm.
It's sweet, it's cuddly, and of course you hope to hell you don't fuck up. You know, whatever. I'm rambling because I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
You know what I have to say to that, Andrew?
If you fart, I will kill you.
No. You know what I have to say?
What?
I have to say, forgetting Sarah Marshall.
But that's an extreme on the crude side. That's like just before you get rid of the romance.
Not crude.
That's just before.
And how do you? What? He totally wooed Mila Kunis in that movie. How is that not romantic? Come on, he sang a Dracula song to her. Come on, come on.
And of course, he...
I die. Yes. Yes.
And of course, because he had his penis in her mouth for a little while.
No, that was in Kristen Bell's.
Yeah, I was talking about Kristen Bell.
Oh, okay. Your overusage of pronouns again.
I love playing the pronoun game as referenced in Chasing Amy.
You don't know where it's gonna go. All of a sudden, you'll be talking about a hobo on the side.
By the way,
street.
That is an amazing romantic comedy now that we talk about.
I know, it is.
Like, you see, those are the kind of movies that I don't consider romantic comedies.
Because
they have
good?
No.
What?
Well, because I find it more entertaining for the comedic factor. I don't even think of the romance. I don't even think of the fact that guy is getting with girl, because that's in every film genre nowadays.
Yeah.
I don't think I should even say nowadays.
What is nowadays, anyway?
You know, I mean, when last did you watch an action with a guy and a girl? hooking up or whatever.
Ooh, I was about to say Crank, but then
Fast and Furious. Yeah, I'm sure Star Trek has a lot of hooking up. We're going to watch that tomorrow night.
I know for a fact that T. Kirk totally bangs Uhura, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's in the trailer.
I know that. Well done, by the way.
By the way, apparently I've heard from my Trekkie friends that Kirk is a bit of a womanizer in the originals. In the series, in the movies.
Yeah. Back in the days he was.
Because I haven't watched any of the old Star Trek films.
That's because that was from a time when womanizing was kind of smiled upon. Not smiled upon, I shouldn't say that. But it was...
The men were running the world and the women were told to shut up.
You know, it was when a time and a place where men would make a comment like, you can teach them how to type, but you can't grow new breasts, you know?
I love that line. And for all of you who don't know where that's from, Google it and watch that movie.
Very good movie. Charlie Wilson's War. Watch it.
Anyways, is there anything else you want to say about this article? Because I'm completely lost. And I'm sorry to anyone listening to this.
No, I don't really have anything to say about this. But you know what? Let's talk about what we've been watching recently. What have you been watching that, you know, maybe not everybody else has been watching, and you think that you should possibly recommend or completely blow these guys onto, you know, whether they should watch it or not?
I don't think what I've been watching counts as what you said, but okay. I'm still going to mention it.
No, don't talk about Buffy.
I'm going to talk about Buffy.
Damn it! Joss Whedon, you suck! Actually, no, I shouldn't say that.
I mean, for sure, this is a show that has been given lots of praise by Joss Whedon fans, and
Given praise by the fans of the man who wrote it. Really? I didn't think so.
I mean, there are 7 seasons, so it's not one of his shows that got cancelled quickly. I mean,
there
I have
many
to
th- of those.
I have to thank Devinger from Slash Film Cast, because he kept shouting at me about how I need to get on these Joss Whedon shows, Firefly and all, and I was like, yeah, whatever, blah blah blah. And then Dollhouse came out and I watched that and I was enjoying it so much, I'm like, you know what, let me go back and watch this. So to date I have seen 3 seasons of Buffy. I still have the finale of season 3 to watch. I'm there, and it's the most enjoyable thing I've watched in a long while.
Really?
I mean,
I never watched Buffy for a long time.
I'm not saying
but
that it's anything special.
It was kind of lame. And I definitely watched a lot of Angel, because that was on TV a lot. And that... Whoa!
Yeah, they're definitely setting up right now for Angel to leave to his next show. Because, what they're talking about now in season 3 is Angel leaving town and stuff. So that's him going off to do his show. So I'll eventually get around to Angel. I'm going to go through the whole Whedon stuff. Like, 7 seasons of Buffy, 5 seasons of Angel, Firefly, and I don't know if there's anything else that I haven't seen. I've seen Dr. Horrible. Yeah, from Ween. I've seen Dr. Horrible. I've seen Dollhouse. I can't wait for the finale this week. Mm-hmm. I hope they renew it. Fuck you, Fox, if you don't.
Fox knows what they're doing.
Yes, that's why they keep making Terminator Chronicles.
Exactly. It's funny. I like Terminator, but I don't like Joss Whedon. What the hell?
And you haven't tried Dollhouse, though.
No, I haven't. I've been meaning to, but you know how it is. I work hard.
Why you watch movies that we tell you from a week before that we're going to review on the night of the podcast.
Exactly. I haven't had a chance to do it.
Right.
Reports.
So, I mean, Buffy season 1 was pretty meh. I mean, it did a lot of the Monster of the Week kind of stuff, where it was pretty episodic. Everything was encapsulated, and they would have like a random monster or a witch story or whatever. But every once in a while, they would give you a story, a continuation of the story.
I guess that makes sense, right? Though. When you're a new show, especially when you have writers that are inexperienced, I don't think Whedon had done much before that.
No, that was his first show.
Yeah, because he had made the movie.
The movie came after.
The movie did not come out.
Really? I thought...
The movie was very early. The movie was with Donald Sutherland and...
yeah, I know who's in
it. A very 80s actress. What the hell was her name? but yeah, I think the movie came first. I'm pretty sure
it did. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the series, started in 1997.
Okay, so 97. Okay. I now have my bear in hand ready to be proved wrong.
We're checking this on IMDb. Let's see what else we can find. The movie.
92.
Is this the movie?
Yeah, 92. Okay. Bitches.
Douglas beats me. Written by Whedon. So there, you get one.
Yeah,
you
okay.
get one.
Bang.
1 point to Douglas. Bong. We should totally have, like, tequila up here.
Yes. A shot every time you lose a point. So, yes, he made it from before. And, like I said, in the first season when you have a writer who probably hasn't proved himself very much. I mean, he has proved himself with the movie. The movie was a big deal. I actually enjoyed the movie at the time. I thought it was fantastic. But I was also very young, 92. I was probably 8 years old, you know.
Let's think about this. How old are you?
Well, I went into high school in 94. And that's
9 years
10.
Old.
So that's probably 9 years nine or eight, old. Exactly.
Nine or ten, dependent on the month. I don't know.
Well, yeah. So, yes, I enjoyed that. But the show, I never quite got into. And I remember I had something else to say. Oh, yes. What I had to say was the episodic nature of it makes sense. Because you don't know if you're going to get renewed for the next season. So you kind of... Actually, you don't even know if you're going to get cancelled the next day. So you kind of keep every episode as a self-sustaining unit. So if you don't go on to the next one, people won't be like, I've missed out on the last story or whatever.
However, I tend to like shows which decide to have an idea over a season. I think that's just amazing. Like The Wire, True Blood... Which is coming
True
back.
True Blood was a bit episodic, but yes, you're right. That had a very...
No, like I mean, it had episodic items.
Right, but it,
generally, it
had
kept
an overarching
moving
theme,
on.
Though. You're quite right, yes. You know what I...
Well...
You know what show I enjoyed?
What?
I loved? That was like that. It did not... And I guess it's because
Are you
it
talking
on,
about like True Blood or like Buffy?
No, like True Blood. Because it was on HBO. They had a bit more range, I'm sure. I'm sure that... You know, HBO said to them, don't worry, you're going to get the full first season. Can't promise the second, but you'll get the first. It was John from Cincinnati. Now, I know people, you know, are very mixed on this. More so probably towards the I hate this show end than the I love this show end. But you know what? I really enjoyed the show. And why? Because, not because, you know, oh, this was fantastic. This was, you know, a cinematical revolution. But what it was... You know me.
I will watch a show. You know Douglas.
I'll watch a show, and I'll be like, you know, I know you're a drug dealer. I'll say that line 5 minutes before the man who actually says it. I can guess the formula a lot, which is, it's kind of, you know, fun to play around with you. But when I come upon a show where I, like, 100% don't know what's happening in the next 2 minutes, there's something sort of exhilarating about it. Something, you know, about the unknown. It's wonderful. And that show, every time something happened, I just thought to myself, what the hell? How did that happen a while ago? So, I enjoyed it for that. I wish it would have come back for a second season. Something tells me it never will.
I thought it was interesting, but I didn't really care that much.
Yeah.
Which show definitely did that for me was Carnival.
Oh, I need to watch that show. I still really haven't.
I don't know if you'd call it unpredictable, but one thing it definitely had was it was so off the beaten path that you always wanted to come back to be like, what the fuck are they going to do next? You know, how far will they take this?
Right.
You know, I mean... You know, you're following one of these carnivals with, like, the bearded lady. And Nick Stahl is the protagonist where he can
bring... Was he good in that show, by the way?
He was.
Okay.
Right? Where he can bring things back to life.
Because he was fantastic in Sin City, but quid pro quo. I nearly vomited. Anyway, yes, that's what you're saying.
He could bring things back to life, you know? You would die, he would touch you, you'd come back to life, and then a whole crop of...
Wasn't there some sort of catch, though? I remember there being a catch in the sense that
if he gave you life, something
else had to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It'd have to be some equivalence thing. I don't know if they ever explained what was equivalent. But, you know, he'd bring back a bird and, like, a bush of roses would die. You know?
Yeah.
It was like... Oh, what was this? There was this show. oh, you haven't seen Pushing Daisies. I shouldn't.
No, I haven't watched Pushing Daisies.
It was like Pushing Daisies. The guy can bring things back to life for a minute, and if he leaves it longer than that, things die in place.
Yeah.
But in that show, it's more like a person for a person kind of thing.
I see. So he would have to kill someone.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Anything else you've been watching recently that you want to talk about?
Go watch Buffy.
Okay, well, I guess there's a movie that I want to talk about. Those of you, I mean, I haven't talked about this on the show yet, so you guys wouldn't know, but I'm a big Tom Robbins fan. Funnily enough, I haven't read very many Tom Robbins books. He just made that huge of an impact on me, especially after the first book I read, Villa Incognito. Where, you know, he has this mythical animal doing all sorts of rubbish. And the story is just fantastical and over the top and ridiculous and unbelievable, but I love it. Anyway, that's not what I'm going to talk about here. It's just a preface to what I am going to talk about. I pre-ordered and finally received about 4 days ago, maybe a week ago, his latest writing, which was Beef a Bear. Very cool cover. I got made fun of it when I was invigilating my students because it looks like a children's book.
But it is a children's book. Well, it says it on the cover.
It says it's a... they said that too. It says a children's book for grown-ups though. So it's a grown-up book for children. Wait, I don't think that helps my argument. Anyway, right. So I was reading it and right as I opened the book, I realized it says other books you can get by Tom Robbins are, and there were about 7 of them, and the second one was Even Call Girls Get the Blues. And I thought to myself while I was there, I said, hang on, there was this movie that I have, even if you go back to earlier episodes, that I even talked about. I said to all you guys that there's this one movie by Gus Van Sant I really want to watch because it has a cool name. It's called Even Call Girls Get the Blues. And holy crap, it's based on a Tom Robbins book. So, of course, I immediately had to watch it. It stars Uma Thurman. A few other guys. And, you know, Keanu Reeves steps in for a little bit. Crispin Glover steps in for a little bit. Ed Begley Jr., lots of older actors. I mean, Keanu Reeves aside, of course, and Uma Thurman. They're not, you know, in the older category. But a lot of actors that were big in, you know, the 90s, maybe the 80s, but not so much now. And I was disappointed. It's funny because Andrew saw me watching the first, you know, 20 to 30 minutes.
No, you have to make this very clear.
Yeah.
Andrew didn't see you watch it. Andrew was forced. He was shouting, Andrew, get in the room. No, you need to see this. Right? And I had to sit through, what was it, like 10 minutes of 10 movie?
10 minutes, yeah, something like that.
I still haven't watched it.
Okay. But no, so I watched the first half an hour, and it looked kind of fun. It was, you know, the Tom Robbins type of thing, the
it's all thumbs, Douglas.
Unbelievable. It's all thumbs. Exactly. The unbelievable aspect of it. There's always some unbelievable section. Uma Thurman is a lady, but she has thumbs.
Is she?
Yes, she is. The thumbs, the size of her middle fingers. Or I shouldn't even say that. Way bigger. Her thumbs. So if you see me here, by the way, if you guys are listening later on, you can't see me. So, haha.
Yes, but come to the live show on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
No, Eastern Daylight Time. We're on Eastern Standard Time. They're on Daylight Savings, making them Eastern Daylight Time.
Whatever.
Bitches. Anyway, okay, so her thumb was so big that if she did like... Okay, I'm looking to see if I'm on screen. I need to move... Okay, if she did like this, right... Her thumb would not reach here. It would reach, like, there. Okay? Which I thought was amazing. I was like, what can they do with this movie? And then Roseanne showed up for a second. Roseanne Barr, Roseanne Arnold, however you know her as. The lady who had the show that finished that had John Goodman, and now she doesn't do much anymore. And she's really fat. So Roseanne came in, and she was this psychic. And she said, oh.
Is she in more than 2 minutes of the
no,
movie?
No, she's not.
Okay,
she's
I thought she looked like a, it looked like a character who was in and out.
Yes, it did look that way, but she wasn't. So the mother went to Roseanne, who was a psychic. And clearly, you know, her daughter has big thumbs. She wants to make sure she'll get married. You know, she won't be somehow adversely affected by her condition. And so she asks, you know, what's going to happen? And Roseanne says, oh, I see. Yes, I see love and a husband. But I see many women. Of course. Me to myself, I was like, that's funny. The thumbs are very large. I wonder what she could use that for. But
I apologize in advance to everything Douglas is about to say.
Hey, she almost used it later in the movie, just to let you know. For that same reason. Anyway, it got built up. And, you know, a lot of the first half of the movie was really cool because it dealt with the more odd parts of her predicament with the big thumbs, you know, how she is the greatest hitchhiker in the world because her thumbs are so large. She even dances around with them and she prances and she goes, you know, does her little movements and woo, and she gets a ride like nobody's business. They even make a joke that she hitchhiked a plane in the beginning of the movie. But other than that, there was nothing much to it. And it got kind of annoying and I was upset and I couldn't believe that I didn't like the movie. So much so that I had to go online and see if Tom Robbins didn't like the movie. That's how bad it was. So, first of all, Tom Robbins is a narrator in this film. So, he has something to do with it. And, funnily enough, he says that he let Gus Van Sant do the movie because he loved two of his other movies. He loved Cowboy, Drugstore Cowboy, and he loved My Own Personal Idaho. Which are, of course, two of my favorite Gus Van Sant movies. So, of course, you know, me and Tom, we share certain likings, which is great.
Anyway. Can I say I like that this bear is in such a huge can?
Because it never finishes.
It seems to never be finishing. I thought I'd be done with it for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still
keeps
there.
Keeps on going. Yeah, but Tom Robbins, I read in his biography, not autobiography, which is odd. I didn't think he was... I know he's a cool dude, but man, a biography of this guy, Tom Robbins, all he's done is write very cool stories. But then, yeah.
Everybody has a biography.
I guess. Once you're famous enough to have books published, you must, you know.
Anyway. I'm sure if I look online, I can find a biography for myself somewhere. Someone's written it somewhere, and she's an asshole.
Right. Anyway, I read it in his thing, and... he has never been critical of the film, but once one interviewer got him to say that he thought that the film suffered from the fact that it stuck too closely to the original material.
Okay.
And I thought about that for a second. And I said to myself, you know what, that makes sense. Tom Robbins' books are shit crazy. And it's really hard to translate that. Because if you think about it, let's look at movies, right? You see what people do, but you never see why they do them.
Well, you never understand. Some of them try.
Yes, they try, but you will never fully understand the why. Like in a book, I can explain. I can say, okay, stop. She just did that, yes, and I just told you about that. But let's talk about why she did that. And you know, she did it because this. You know, it could be some crazy explanation, which. He has loads of. Oh my goodness. You should read his books. They're crazy. They're wonderful.
I'm sure I'll get around to that Beef a Bear book one of these days.
Yeah. I've read a half of it in maybe a couple hours. But I think that it was so crazy that you just watched it and you're like, man, this is kind of crazy. This doesn't make much sense, but eh. And I like that. I like movies like that. I'm a big, you know, Fear and Loathing fan. I'm a big Terry Gilliam fan in general. I love, you know, odd movies, but this movie was, I don't know, a bit more than odd. It lacked something, and I really couldn't tell you what. But, I don't know, still a movie that you could watch and maybe enjoy. Especially if you like big thumbs. So, the only Tom Robbins book I believe that has been made into a movie, even Cowgirls Get Blues. The Blues. Think about it. Probably don't watch it. Well, no, watch it. And then maybe you won't like it. You probably won't like it. But you could say that you watched Tom Robbins'
book. Is it bad enough that you kind of think it's good for being bad?
No, it's not bad like that. But I wouldn't even say it's... excuse me. I wouldn't even say it's bad. It just lacks something. There's... The movie, it's like, it's all of these parts, but they're not working together because they don't have something to kind of tie them together. They don't mesh together very well. So, like, the beginning is wonderful. I love the beginning. There are parts in the middle where I'm kind of like, yeah, I love it, but, what's going on here? Yeah, so, it's, you know, it's like a bunch of gears without that middle thing to turn them or something. So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, then. I don't know how much of this news we're going to get through today.
Yeah, we've been talking for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah, and on top of which, we took last week off. Right? So there are tons of news out there.
Exactly.
But you know what? Let's go through a couple of these that we can...
Oh! First news item. Number one. We're getting Star Trek before you. Star Trek opens here on Wednesday.
You mean right now while we're recording when we could be at Star Trek?
Yeah, shit. Turn off the microphones. Let's go.
It's already done by now.
Yeah. So, we could have watched it today, but we're going to watch it tomorrow, which is still the day before the official release.
Michelle is coming with us.
Okay, great.
She's a Trekkie, so...
So I will have to deal with... Oh my goodness, did I tell you about my Lord of the Rings experience?
No, let's go! Go! What's this Lord of the Rings?
So it's not really a big experience, but it was just a funny, funny thing that happened. And maybe not even that funny, as I think about it. Anyway, so I went to Lord of the Rings, the first one, Fellowship of the Ring, with my friends. You've met both of them, I think, Jeff and Owen.
Yeah, Owen is a policeman, right?
Owen is a policeman. Jeff is the roommate. Historian.
The roommate.
But he was a roommate for a while, but he wasn't the roommate when you went
there. It's what I remember them for.
Okay, all right.
He's the one with the glasses.
That's right.
Who we sat with after graduation ceremony. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
as far as I'm concerned, he's the roommate.
Okay. All right, so we went to Lord of the Rings.
Unlike that bearded dude who I forget his name.
Matt Corley. A fun, fun guy. If you're listening, Matt... I don't know. You're cool. Email me.
I'm sure he's not listening.
No, he's not. He used to have a radio show, and I used to listen to him even while I was here. And he said he would put a pin on Jamaica on the map because they put a pin everywhere that people listen to them on. I wonder if he actually did that.
I think we should put a pin.
I think we should put a pin, yes. One on... Well, we can't put one on Australia anymore because we lost Miles.
I'd like to think deep down inside he listens to us, you know, in his spare time. He downloads the episode and listens to it, even though he doesn't come in live anymore.
Okay, yeah.
No, what we should do is we should have a pin for everywhere that we get a guest from.
Ah, yes. So
we've had a good amount of Canadians.
Have we had any?
We've had Dave from Colorado.
Dave's from the States, okay.
I don't think we've had anyone else. Everyone else is from Canada. But we were...
Okay, so listen, all of you European people. All of you people from China. From all these places that we want to be represented. Please. Just tweet at us.
Yeah.
Or, email. You know, we've got our emails. There's unnamed@gmanreviews or douglas@gmanreviews or andrew.robinson@gmanreviews. So, you know, we want you to come on the show. We will have you on the show. And if you're making a movie, give us the screeners. That's it. Anyway, you were saying something.
I've forgotten as well. The bear made me forget.
Well, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. Lord of the Rings story. So, it's not a big story, but...
I tell you right now, because of all of this, I'm cutting a lot of the news stories.
Okay, alright, sure. So, Lord of the Rings story. I went to the Lord of the Rings with Jeff and Owen, and I believe a few more people, I'm sure. Probably Gina came. I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people came. And there were these three girls. They were dressed up as hobbits or something. I think it was hobbits because I think they had their knives, you know, or not knives, but their short swords, you know, the swords that were long enough to be hobbit swords but not long enough to be human swords. and they had their outfits on and they were great. Okay, so there's that. But also, so these three girls were dressed up as hobbits. And
can I just ask, as a side note, were these girls attractive at all?
No.
Okay, good.
But I didn't even know them, so I just saw them.
And, them doesn't have anything
to do with it. Okay, it doesn't have anything to do with it. It doesn't have anything to do with it. But I'm just saying I didn't know them, just to show you that it's not much of a story. It was hilarious, because all through the movie, you know, they were shouting out, screaming whenever something happened, laughing.
Which Lord of the Rings was this?
The first one.
Okay.
Laughing a bit too hard at the jokes, and by the end of the movie, they were in tears. Literally. They were crying. No, they were not crying. They were bawling. They were sobbing because the movie was so good, apparently.
Oh, I was about to wonder, like, or what was bad.
I think something may have happened in the end. I don't know. Maybe they thought Frodo was dead or so. I can't remember what happened in the end.
I haven't watched that movie in forever.
I know.
What are we going to do? One of these days, like, as soon as, like, school is done, you know, exams are out, we're going to sit down one day.
And watch a movie.
15 hours.
Oh, goodness.
We're going to go through it. We're going to go through it.
I remember my big roommate, Kyle, the one that I had for a very long time. He went with another one of my roommates, Suds.
We can take a break between films, though. So.
Yeah.
Like a bathroom break, you know, a beer break.
Because I'm about to tell you how long it lasts. He went to one, and it wasn't the extended edition, which is the ones that I have. It was the regular ones. He went to a three movie showing, and I believe it took him 12 hours
to get through the three.
Yeah, because what it was it was the premiere of the third movie, and before the third movie they had the two, and so it was a midnight premiere, so he started, I don't know if he started at like 5 o'clock in the evening and then went on to like 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was, but I think it was like a 12 maybe 13 hour sitting.
I'm willing for it. I'm up for it anytime.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what happens is the night of, we'll watch one, and then we'll split it up because we're wusses.
Exactly. Maybe it'll be, you know, during a break when I have no school or something. No teaching.
Yes, happy Teacher's Day, Douglas.
Thank you. I got a nice little basket.
Yeah, that's what I saw in the kitchen, and I was like, oh, he got fruit.
Yes. Got lots of fruit. Fruit cocktail.
Why do they have to bother giving you the fruit cocktail on top of all the fruits in the bag?
I think it's because they know me. They know I won't do it.
So they know they have to do it for me.
Yeah. So that's my Lord of the Rings story. And we can talk about Deadpool now.
Alright, we went and we saw the Wolverine movie the other day.
I have not read your review. What do you think?
I thought it worked as a dumb action film. That alone, it's really a bad movie if you try and take it seriously,
yeah.
Which you shouldn't anyways because it's Wolverine, right? But
yeah, I don't know. I thought
it's definitely not something I'm going to be watching again or even checking out in DVD or in Blu-ray now. Because I'm getting my laptop.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I disagree. It was crap throughout. They couldn't even get the adamantium claws right. They looked so fake.
X-Men had better adamantium claws.
That's what I thought. I remember thinking to myself, when I watched X-Men, I didn't think these things were fake, but no, whoa. More money does not equal better
more
graphics.
More technology. 9 years later, worse graphics.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I know what it is. I'm sure this is what happens, right? The movie got leaked online.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And they were worried about not making any money. So they decided not to spend the extra money to fix the graphics from the work
print. No, actually, what I think happened was so many people liked the work print that they realized, wait a second, we could make it just as cheesy. So let's leave those claws alone.
But at the end of the credits, it's exactly the same movie. Fox lied to us.
No, no, no. I'm told by quasi-reliable sources that you see loads of strings and you see loads
frames. Other than the graphics.
You mean the arc of the story.
The actual film.
Oh, okay.
They were talking about how, you know, it's 16 minutes longer.
Yeah, that's because they want to make more money.
Yeah, but they lied. I don't like that.
Liars.
We actually...
Ha-ha! There you go. Don't drink on the job, sir.
That's what happens when I try to talk while I'm swallowing
beer. By the way,
beer.
Can I say, I was... Completely different topic, by the way.
No, we're allowed to go on tangents today. Damon isn't here.
I read an article on the Film School Reject site.
Which one?
I don't know who this person is. Paul something. I don't think he's...
Paul Sweeney?
I don't know. No,
it's Adam Sweeney. Sorry.
I don't think that's him. I don't think he's a regular writer because I don't know his name, right? But he wrote about one of my favorite movies. He wrote about The Big Lebowski.
Oh, no, that's Cola Bias. That's
no,
the movie.
No, it was not Cola Bias or Bias, however it's pronounced. Well, maybe it was, but in the feed, it said it was Paul something or something.
You can't really check the feed because a lot of them.
No, well, the feed usually tells you, you know, I know there's Cola Bears, you know, there's all of those guys. But, yeah, anyway, what was I going to say? I love the article. I thought it was fantastic. And, oh, yeah, wait, although, no, it's High Fidelity.
Hold on, no, I'm trying to get to the one, because I know exactly what we're talking about. It's this newest feature they're doing.
Yeah, movies
called Movies We Love.
Yeah, there it is, Big Lebowski.
Paul Cileo.
See, I was right. Suck it! Anyway,
there we go. 2 points. 2 points.
2 points!
I'm almost done, my bear.
Ooh. I think we might need to go down and get the third one and, like, somehow spread it out.
No, I just want the third one for myself.
No, I want the third one for myself. Anyway, what was I going to... This article summed up my complete feeling about the movie. I'm so serious. For example, he talks about, you know, how the first time he watched it, he thought it was okay, but nothing great. That's exactly how I felt. And then after every time you watch it, you get more and more into the situation. You see more detail that's coming out, and you're just like, ah, so good.
Talking about that movie and Film School Rejects,
mm-hmm.
There was an article that I read on Film School Rejects a ways back. I can't remember when it was. I'll try and find it and post it in the show notes.
Yeah.
I believe Neil Miller wrote this one, where he was talking about how he felt watching the movie with his friends.
Oh, yes. I think I know exactly which one you're talking about. And they hated it and he loved it. Yeah.
And, you know, can you imagine... I believe a lot of people have gotten into this situation. It's not necessarily the Big Lebowski, but with movies in general. Because you watch a movie, you love it, you recommend it to your friends.
Yeah.
What can be more painful than watching a movie you love with your friends that you've recommended it to and watching them hate the movie?
Actually.
Like sitting down with their thumbs twiddling and being like, should I really tell my friend that this movie is crap? You know? Like
that's how I felt when I remember the first time I watched Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah.
I was like all the way through, I'm like, does Andrew like this movie? It's a little bit odd. I wonder what he thinks.
Which is why I try my best when I recommend films to people not to watch it with them, because I feel like I'm watching them more than I'm watching the movie.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I mean, you want your friends to enjoy the film, but it's just sad and like honestly horrible when you're seeing your friend like dazing off during the movie because you know they're like, oh, this movie is shit, when they're just trying to be nice because you recommended it and they know you love it so much. Kind of like if I can imagine trying to recommend WALL-E to my friends who all hate me for liking that movie.
Yes, we do. Oh boy. But yeah. I mean, I know what you're talking about. You've got this film that you've got a hard on for, and then, you know, you give it out to somebody, you say, watch it, and then they come back. I'm sure that's exactly how Damien felt when we came back with Quid Pro Quo. What happened was he had to put up a good front. You know, I knew you would like it. It made sense. Da, 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 da. You know what happened when he went home? He cried. He shed a tear.
He might be crying right now because we're reviewing his suggestion.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I hate Damien. No, I'm just joking. I don't know. I'll tell you.
Save it.
I'll save it for later.
Save it. Keep it inside.
Keep it inside.
You know, kind of like janitor in Scrubs. You must let that anger fizzle.
No, not janitor. No, no, no. Actually, I was more thinking of, I've forgotten his name, but Ricky Bobby's counterpart.
Ricky Bobby.
You know, he's like, can I drive up? No, you can't. Okay, I'll keep that inside. I put it down.
I can't remember his name. John C. Reilly's.
Yeah, you know, I can't remember his name.
Hey, spoiler.
Spoiler my ass. That movie's like 10 years old. God damn it. If you
I'm
don't,
sure it's like 2-3 years old.
If you haven't watched it yet, you better watch it. It's hilarious. One of Will Ferrell's better movies.
Alright, no, I had like 6 or 7 news items to go through, but we're only going to talk about like 3.
Okay, right. Dark Tower, Gunslinger cast. Wait, this is something. Wait, hang on, Gunslinger is getting a movie?
They've been. Alright, no, this article, I have to say, is like really rumorish.
Okay.
Right? But they've definitely been talking about making Gunslinger up into a film,
mm-hmm.
right? And this article posted on filmstalker.co.uk. Is talking about how J.J. Abrams is going to be directing. Christian Bale is rumored as the gunslinger.
Oh my goodness, don't make me throw up, please.
Right? Now, this is just amazing to me. Like, I definitely don't believe one word of it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to talk about it because we've read the book.
We've read the book. First one. Sure there's more. There's no more?
No, there's no more as far as I'm concerned.
I can tell you for a fact. There are about 10 Stephen King books.
They're like 10 issues of the Dark Tower seat stuff, but the Gunslinger arc is all of what I have.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
So I think, at least that's what I believe. I mean,
Didn't seem like it ended.
If anyone's out there who knows more about comic books than
But no, that's what I'm saying. I'm actually going into a different realm. I'm not talking about the comic book. If maybe the comic book ended there, it didn't feel like an ending, however. But...
I just like to make the official statement by Barry's
book. Okay, how long has it gone? We need to talk. This is, what, an hour and maybe 16? An hour and 10?
An hour and 6 minutes, according to Audacity. But I'm sure we'll minus around 20 in editing, because I had a lot of rubbish at the beginning.
Yep. Anyway, what were we saying? We were going to talk... Oh, yes, this is right. The Gunslinger. I wasn't even talking in the comic book realm. I'm talking about the book realm. Stephen King has written about 10... like books that thick. You see me, camera? That thick. You guys watching late? Or no, you can't be watching. You're listening late. Ha ha. Watch on time, bitches.
This is what alcohol does to
exactly.
us.
Exactly. He's written about 10 books on the thing. On the Dark Tower. And I believe the Gunslinger is pretty in a prominent role in the thing. So I don't think they're at a loss for... content.
Okay. However, like, just going off the comic book, right? Because I think they're trying to stick to the comic book.
Okay.
Right? Christian Bale shouldn't be playing that role.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
I think he's a little old for that role.
Hang on. I wouldn't say that. First of all, okay, he's old. He's probably 40-something. And personally, I know a lot of people love him because, oh, he's sexy. I don't like him as an actor. However, I don't want to be the guy that says... this guy can't play the role. He's out of his realm. He can't, you know, da 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 da. Unless we're talking about Paris Hilton here. I'm not going to try and judge too harshly. Christian Bale, I'm sure, could pull something off. This movie might not need, like, the best actor. Because it would be, in its essence, an action movie. And so it wouldn't need somebody to... go all Daniel Day-Lewis on the bitch. But I would say that I would prefer not to have Christian Slater in the role because...
Bale. You said Christian Slater.
Wait, what?
You just said Christian Slater.
Wait a second. Have we been talking about Christian Bale?
Yes.
As in, I am Batman, Christian yes. Bale?
Article says Christian Bale.
Okay, I've been talking about Christian Slater all this time.
Because you're an idiot. And you're drunk. Please walk the line. Touch your nose and lift up the other foot. I don't know what the fuck the test is. Say the alphabet backwards or some shit. And there, Douglas has finished his beer.
Oh my, okay.
I'm trying to see if I can find a volume so we know how much this actually is.
7.9%.
No, I'm talking about the actual amount
of beer. 3 ounces? I don't know. It might be a pint. Anyway, I am now going to retract my complete statement. and say, I think Christian Bale, though he has been somewhat pigeonholed in this action thing, and actually might further that pigeonhole with this movie, because I can see it blossoming into a wonderful action movie. I think he would do well in this thing because he's a great actor. I like him, and he's done a lot of cool stuff. And this is another show that could be, or it's not show, another movie that could be very cool. Even though I know you didn't really like the comic book, you've told me this already.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand,
and I think it's actually the most expensive comic book I've bought to date because it's hardcover.
Ouch. But yeah, I actually enjoyed it a little bit. I love the way they talk, and I thought the story was pretty decent. However, I'll agree with you that it is mediocre in comparison to everything else that you have, that you've made me read. So yes, it is lacking in that respect. But yeah, Christian Bale, go ahead, man. You've already shown me that you can do Western.
Oh, right. 310 to Yuma.
310 to Yuma.
However, he was playing a role that fit his age. This movie is something called for someone like a... I mean, I can even see Ryan Reynolds fitting
no,
in this
stop,
role.
No, stop, shut up. I love Ryan Reynolds, but no. No. Come on, this role requires somebody of the acting acumen of, say, Zac Efron.
Hey, he was in a good SNL episode.
No, he was in a good SNL skit. Did you watch the rest of that?
No, episode? I only needed that
it
skit.
It wasn't that funny. But,
I keep tipping my beer like there's something
know,
in there.
I know, because you need some more.
I need some more.
But, yeah, you're right. He's a little bit old, but who gives a crap? They could change it. They could be like, okay, you get, you know, your gunslinging guns at 40. Sure. Christian Bale is awesome. Let's see what he does. I need to sneeze.
Do not sneeze. Alright, another piece of news that came out this week is that Ben Stiller is producing a Little Britain movie.
Actually, I talked to this with Andrew at work, my friend at work. And we're not sure how it will work. It's a skit comedy, which is great on its own. I love the show. I haven't watched that many BBC episodes, but I've watched almost all the HBO episodes. It's hilarious, you know. I'm a lady, I do lady things. It's fantastic. But I don't know how you translate that into a feature-length film. Maybe they'll try a thing like Monty Python did with The Meaning of Life, which was actually a great movie, a really funny movie. And if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it as well as every other Monty Python movie or episode ever made. So I'm actually uncertain about how that will play off. I'd like to think it would be good, but, you know, I just don't know.
I don't know how they're going to make this into a movie. I mean, as you said, wonderful as a skit comedy.
Yeah.
Half an hour show. Great. But what are they going... Like, are they going to go towards, like, epic movie kind of stuff?
Because
that's the only thing I can... That's the only template I can conceive this idea working in. Are they going to write one skit into a 90-minute film?
Maybe. Hey, SNL has done it. Look how many SNL skits have become movies. There's Night at
Roxbury.
That's
true. That's
true. There's Coneheads. There's Superstar. There, all sorts of SNL skits have become movies. So you're right. Maybe
Wayne's World.
Wayne's World. I didn't even remember that. And that's probably the biggest one. So yeah, you're right. Maybe they will focus on one thing. Like probably, you know what's their biggest one, I think? Is the one with the cripple that's not crippled. I think maybe they'll focus on that one. Or I'm a lady. I don't know. So, yeah. Listen, guys. I know you're funny. So funny that one of you actually got to be on Spaced. So
I was about to mention that.
Do your best. Make a good movie. Make me laugh. Make everybody else laugh. Put it on DVD with cool extra features and I'll get it. All right.
Alright, another piece of news that came out this week. Disney has been pretty busy.
Yes.
Pretty busy.
They're on Hulu now? Is that what you're going to talk about?
Well, I was going to mention that, as well as the fact that they're joining fucking Fox.
For what?
In the idea that they're taking special features off of the rental DVDs. They send out DVDs to rental companies, right? However, they're going to send rental companies different DVDs from the regular ones. And these DVDs will have only the film on it. No special features, whether or not there are or aren't, for the DVD that you would buy in the shop.
Okay, let's just think this one through. Let's say I'm a prospective purchaser, and I say to myself, I will rent this DVD before I purchase it, because I want to see what it offers me. And then I rent it, and it offers me nothing. Will I then buy the... No, sorry, I have to use big words. Will I then purchase the said DVD? No, I don't fucking think I would.
But herein lies the other question. Do you think a special feature is enough to tilt you in the favor of buying a DVD, even though the movie doesn't itself?
No. Not that the movie doesn't itself. Okay, here's the thing, right?
Because if the movie pushes you to buy the DVD, then that's the movie itself.
Yeah, I know.
But do you think a special feature alone...
I have learned, right? Especially from my purchase of Knocked Up, which was, guys, if you ever feel the need to buy a super director's cut extended edition DVD, get Knocked Up. Fantastic. Anyway, I've learned from that the DVD is not just a movie. The DVD is the special features as well. There are movies, for example, you know, there are movies that you're always going to be like, you know what? I have to have it. I have to own that movie. It doesn't matter what is on the DVD, I must own it. However, there are some movies that you love on TV, you'll watch all the time whenever it comes on TV, and you say to yourself, that's a great movie, but the movie isn't enough.
Okay.
And, well, I shouldn't say the movie isn't enough, but it doesn't pull you to actually say, you know what, I'm going to spend $20 on this thing. The special features, they help. They more than help. I mean, if, for example, Knocked Up has some special features, guys, that just, they're beyond words. There is one feature that's about 45 minutes long that's I hope it's pretend, but it's a pretend, almost like a casting call.
You can see some of those casting bits on funnyordie.com.
Yeah. So watch those. If you need to, you know, figure out if you like the special features, watch that. I mean, there's a section where, you know, Michael Cera goes off on Judd Apatow because Judd Apatow is pretending as if, you know, Michael Cera was going up for the role that Seth Rogen was in. As was James Franco. There was one with Danny McBride before he was actually extremely big. I didn't even know it was him until I watched it recently and I was like, wait, that's the guy, Danny McBride. There's the Pakistani guy from 40-Year-Old Virgins. Virgin singular, sorry. Yeah. The special features of a film.
Of a DVD.
Of a DVD. Make that DVD. Anybody can put a movie on the DVD. You've made the movie already. All it is two clicks and it's on a DVD. Give me some special features.
And I'd like to thank Warner Brothers for that shitty Dark Knight DVD that I bought. Oh, Christ.
I told you to wait, but you wouldn't listen to me.
Movie was just too awesome.
It's the second time, too. I told you with the Batman Begins. You said, no, I must have the movie. I said, Andrew, there
and
is
I went
a better
and I
version.
I double dipped. I have the better version now, and I'm happy. And Warner Brothers, fuck you for the Dark Knight DVD release. I was like, oh, I need this for Christmas. I have to have it. I didn't give anyone that movie for Christmas because I wanted it.
You know, actually, it was funny. I actually almost thought, I was like, he's buying two copies of Batman because you got one for you and you got one for Nicholas. I was like, I wonder if he's going to get one for me.
I got three copies. And one of them was for my friend as well.
Oh, yeah?
He was like, yeah, buy me one. I need that movie. I'm like, do you want the one disc or the two disc? He's like, give me the two disc. And what's on the second disc? Nothing. A trailer and the all of those things. What's it called? You see, during the movie, there are times when he's watching news on TV. They give us all of those news clips.
I read that article. Sorry, I'm completely.
No, we're gonna get to that. Yeah, we're gonna get to that.
Yeah.
All right. Be patient, my son.
Okay. Back to Warner Brothers and their shite that they call DVDs.
But like, here is my issue, right, with this idea, right? I have no problem with them doing this, because I mean, technically, when you're renting a movie, it's really because you want to watch the movie more than you want to see the special features. If you want to see the special features, you're one of the DVD collectors out there. But
no, some people, and I would probably put myself in that category. Yes, sometimes you just want to watch a movie, but there are other times when you're not sure. You're like, you know what? I wonder if I should buy this film.
I agree. There are certain factors that add towards people going towards buying the film. Mm-hmm. However, there's one issue that really kills me.
Okay, what's that?
Is that Fox was the first one to do this move, right? And they really messed up, because at one point when Slumdog Millionaire came out on DVD, people who bought the DVD
actually got
DVD copies without special features on it, which were, I'm supposing, the rental versions of these DVDs. So all this is going to do is make confusion and get people screwed up with their orders. And one thing for sure is, when I order a DVD and I get it in the mail, if I get a faulty copy of the DVD or a wrong copy, I'm pissed as hell. Because I don't care how much you're willing to trade it in for me, I still have to pay the shipping to ship it back to you, and you to send it back to me or something like that. So it's still going to run me more dollars, and on top of which, let me have the DVD for 2 weeks less. I have to wait another 2 weeks to watch the movie, because Kyrie not bringing that shit out.
Yes, you've already talked about how many movies we're not going to see this year, which I'm very sad about.
Yeah,
because I believe you're on some of those.
There are a couple that I'm kind
of
iffy.
Yeah, there's a couple where I looked at them and I'm like, I think that one would come out. But generally, yeah, I agree with you.
So yeah, like, do you think that Disney is gonna make the same mistake Fox did?
Well, first of all, Disney, Andrew, this is typical Disney. Do you know that? Oh, no, you do know. But do you not realize that you're talking about a company that involved? If I wanted to watch Lion King tomorrow, or no, sorry, if I wanted to buy Lion King tomorrow, I probably couldn't. I don't know if it's in the vault, or if it's out the vault, or if, you know, it's on its way to being in or out, or... What the hell, Walt? I know you're still alive. You're in that flipping frozen cryogenic crap. Come on. Come on. Give me my movies when I want them. If I have just seen Lion King on TV, or say, you know, Miley Cyrus, I should be able to buy that movie as opposed to not. This crap about, oh, I'm creating demand. No, you're creating what's the word? Frustration and sufferation, and we hate it, or I do, and I am important, okay? Because I say so. Anyway, let's talk about a new news item. Now, I read this article, but I didn't... I read this article. This article is the one about Ferris Bueller and the Fight Club
theory. All right, just for warnings for anyone listening, if you haven't seen Fight Club or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, on top of which being an idiot, spoilers are coming up. Right? Okay.
So Ferris Bueller, everybody loves Ferris Bueller. Andrew owns it. I wish to own it. I love it. He loves it. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's a very, you know, typical but wonderful 80s movie about, you know, a crazy day out as opposed to a crazy night out. You know, you've got the crazy day, the crazy night, like I was saying before when we were talking about the Ethan Hawke movie. Or Ethan Hawke, yes. So, this is the one with Matthew Broderick. And his friend, Cameron, real name, that's the character name, and Matthew Broderick's girlfriend, they go out for a nice day. They skip school, and Fight Club, on the other hand, is a 90s movie where you've got Brad Pitt and Ed Norton, where, you know, Ed Norton is actually Brad Pitt, or Brad Pitt is actually Ed Norton. You don't really know. You assume that Ed Norton is the dude and Brad Pitt is the imaginary friend, but
Whatever. What? You assume?
Yes, you do assume.
Do you, when you were watching that film for the first time, did you guess that Brad Pitt was
imaginary? No. I'm saying that once you know the storyline, you assume it's Ed Norton as a person and Brad Pitt as
another
person. Right. Now I've given away a lot to Fight Club, and if you watch that movie, you probably will find it funnier. Like, I found it funnier the second time around.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I was looking at it, and I'm like, he's really talking to somebody else that thinks he's somebody else. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, anyway. So, there is this amalgamation of theorems.
Hobo, that scene where he beats himself up in the office, and he sits on and he says to himself, this feels a lot like the first time I fought with Kylo.
Actually, you know what got me the second time I watched it? Was when he talked to Marla Singer while she was...
Hold on, just for clarification, because I haven't watched this movie in a while. Which one is Marla?
Marla Singer is Helena Bonham Carter.
Okay, just checking.
He was talking to her, and she was like, you're crazy, you know? And then she walks out. And I'm just like, yeah, that's funny. Because I think he said something like, why are you still here? You know? Yes, there is this theory that Ferris Bueller's Day Off is nothing more than a precursor to the Fight Club, in the sense that Cameron, the sort of nerdy, sort of not-so-outgoing part of the pack, never actually had friends. And he made them up in his head so that he could go out with them on the town, have this fun. And they even said to, you know, they said, if you think about it, anybody who actually talked to them or interacted with them acted extremely confused. And that was because Cameron was talking in third person, second person, and first person for each of these characters. So yes, what did you have to say about this thing?
All right, now, my first question was, how plausible is this theory? Like, does it really play out through the whole... I mean, I definitely can see it working for, like, you know, a casual view. Like, does it work in that you can see that Cameron goes out only because he makes up Ferris Bueller, and Ferris Bueller forces him to get out of the house on a sick day, right? But, like... Kind of like with Fight Club. Like, at the end of Fight Club, when you find out that Edward Norton has made up Tyler Durden, you kind of have to watch it again and go through and be like, does it really work? Like, I mean, there are a couple points in Fight Club where you're like, it's kind of a little silly and stupid, but it works.
No, it completely works.
Right?
And what I love is, I remember reading this article about Fight Club where there was... You know that there's a job, right? People are on the set for continuity, right? They look at film and then they're like, oh, hang on, that flower wasn't there in the last scene, you can't keep it there, you have to change that. So there was this continuity artist, I don't know if that's what they're called, but there's a scene in Fight Club where Tyler Durden is driving and Ed Norton is in the passenger side.
Yeah, that's the big scene where people are confused and get to wonder whether it really works or not.
Yeah, so Tyler Durden is driving, Ed Norton is in the passenger seat, and they go and there's this big crash. But when there's a crash and the car flips over, Tyler Durden gets out of the passenger seat and pulls Ed Norton out of the driver's side. And the continuity artist is like, that's not right, it doesn't make any sense. David Fincher had to be like, listen.
You haven't seen the twist. Same
thing.
You haven't seen the twist, continuity person. Exactly. Wait until we get later in the editing process.
Yeah, so I just thought that was a stroke of genius in the sense of making it work. You're showing them from the precursor. Holy crap, look at that. And then, of course, you know, you've got all the snippets of Brad Pitt, like, hugging people. You know, in the front.
The editing of the film that he talks about when he works as a
projectionist. Like, no, not that. But, well, in a sense, it is that. But every now and again, there is one frame... where Tyler Durden is in it. There's one where, you know, he's hugging a doctor, which is fun. Because the doctor's talking about, yes, you need to sleep proper sleep, no pills for you. And then while he's saying that, Tyler Durden just comes in like, burp. And, yeah.
So, yeah, my question is, do you think this works in the first Bueller?
Well, first of all, I thought it was a joke.
No, this is people actually putting, like, theory to seriously, like, does it work?
I don't know if it works. The first thing that pops to my head is the Frohman Act. The section where all three of them are trying to get into this fancy restaurant. Which, by the way, Ferris Bueller's dad ends up being in the same restaurant. But yes, and they have, in order to get there,
but then,
they have to do a lot of phoning around and tricking them into tricking the maitre d' into, not maitre d',
Maitre d' is the right word.
To think that, you know, the police are on the line looking for this Frohman character who is the Sausage King of Chicago. I don't think it works with that scene. I really don't.
It doesn't work in the sense that, yes, there are no three people there for the party. However, I think it could work in the sense that he could pull off all the voices. Let's imagine that he can pull off these voices on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because technically, if I walk into a restaurant and I say, hey, I'm here for this party of three, you're fucking going to seat me. I might be there alone waiting for the next two, but you're going to seat me and I'm going to get served. Right? And then also when it deals with the father, one thing that I find really funny about Ferris Bueller is that all these scenes in which Ferris Bueller could get caught by the father, he never does. The father never sees him, which is something that's really peculiar. Because can you see something that's not there?
I can. Especially when I'm drunk.
So that's definitely something that adds to the theory, right? Like, is there anything else that can put it into question?
I'm sure there are. I don't know. The fact that everybody knows Ferris Bueller. But then again, nobody knows Cameron, so maybe he goes by the name Ferris Bueller at school. However, would that then warrant, seeing as he's supposed to be this nerdy dude, and he doesn't know very many people, would that then warrant the type of frenzy that the school went into when Ferris Bueller didn't come to school?
You lost me there.
Did you not remember what happened?
No, I remember what happened, but I mean,
he got told a whole heap of calls. But then again, you know,
they sent a prostitute to his house.
I know. No, but not just that. There's all sorts of things. But at the same time, you know what? There's an argument, I'm sure, against it that says, oh, he just made up all of that frenzy in his head. But then,
without him in the scene, he's made up.
True, but the thing about it is, though, with any movie, you could say, you know what, if it doesn't have him, he's made it up in his head, and then this Fight Club theory would work. I think it's just a joke. Not that it's
I think
a joke,
one thing think that definitely puts me into question, I mean, of course, we can use the he made it up in his head excuse, but the Dankache scene, my favorite scene from the film.
Mm-hmm.
Where is Cameron in that scene? Is he Cameron, or is he Ferris?
As far as I'm concerned, he's walking with Ferris Bueller's girlfriend. That's what I think. I do not hold to this belief of the Fight Club theory.
So I think we're going to leave this theory for like future determining whether it works or not. I think we should have like a first day where we sit down and we watch it properly. Yeah. Trying to prove or disprove this Ferris Bueller theory.
We have to have pads out and, you know, like taking notes and rewinding.
We can write stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll come back to this another day, but it's an interesting article, an interesting way to look at the film.
True.
You know, it's one of those films I love, Ferris Bueller. Check it out if you haven't.
Yeah, we've gone along a very long time, and so I think we should just mention this news topic that we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was going to let you go in, but fine.
Okay, so I just want to say that HD DVD has not just died, but it has now gotten kicked while it was in its grave. Warner Brothers, I believe, is a company that has put out this campaign where what it says is it will take back all its HD DVDs and replace them with Blu-ray copies of the movies that you have for ridiculously low prices. I believe it's something along the lines of $2 or $5 per DVD. I shouldn't even say DVD. Per
exchange.
Per title. That's what I want to say. Per title. And I think this is kind of good. Warner Brothers is showing that they actually
care
a little bit, you know. They're saying to their customers, okay, we lost this war, we actually went into this Blu-ray thing.
Was Warner Brothers one of the studios who went to HD?
I believe so, but I'm not 100% sure. You can check that.
Okay.
That's your job for tonight.
Check that's my homework.
Warner Brothers, exactly. Check if Warner Brothers was a part of the HD DVD consortium. Anyway, that's it. I think this is a cool thing that Warner Brothers is doing. I wish they'd do more cool things.
Yeah, I wish I had HD DVDs now. I could send in and get the Blu-ray copy. But then I would have had to sink money into HD DVD, and I'd be sad exactly. when it died. Yeah. So yeah, I'm okay with this. It's cool, whatever. Alright, we have a couple trailers we want to talk about tonight. One is the premiere of District 9. They had this teaser come up.
Is this Peter Jackson?
No, Peter Jackson is producing it, I think. He's not directing.
I understand, because I saw the article about it, and Peter Jackson was mentioned, and I was like, Peter Jackson is doing a film other than Tintin and Lord of the Rings? What the hell?
Yeah,
ooh, I'm very squared.
You're very yeah.
In the video, I'm very pixelated.
Yeah, I lowered the quality for Ustream.
Why?
Because whatever. No, I'm going to attempt for the first time in 2 weeks to play a trailer in Ustream.
We hope it works.
We hope it works. Apparently, there's a new version of this trailer out on the internet in which the alien isn't blurred and there's subtitles for it. I watched it earlier. It's kind of cool, but I couldn't find one on YouTube, so I'm going to play the first version of this teaser.
Okay, remember, you need to pull out the headphones.
Yes, I will.
So I need to hear it.
And let's hope this works on Ustream. You should be seeing...
Look at me!
Nobody comes back late at night anymore. They have more security.
The government noticed that they were moving into new areas. That's when things started to get out of hand.
They don't belong here.
They're spending so much money to keep them here when they could be spending it on other things. At least they're keeping them separate from us.
A lot of bad things started to happen.
They must just go. I don't know where they go. They must just go.
We're at the breaking point. People are living in fear.
Why are you here? Why don't you just leave? How do your weapons work?
I just want everyone watching this right now to learn from what has happened.
Yeah, so that was a trailer for District 9, and I'd like to start out by saying thank you, Ustream, because now I can play trailers in Ustream again. I was so annoyed for like 2 weeks I couldn't do it. It wouldn't work for some reason, but I think it has something to do with Ustream's upgrade.
Possibly.
Right, so like, what did you think of this trailer? This is the first time you're seeing it.
Yes, it is the first time I'm seeing it. It looks interesting. I don't know. It looks like something I'd like to watch. The first thing I thought of when I heard the alien was Star Wars. The scene. It sounds like not Boba Fett. Yeah, not Boba Fett. You remember when in not Return of the Jedi? Yes, it is Return of the Jedi. Han Solo is in the carbonite or the whatever the hell that is, and Princess Leia, though you don't know it's Princess Leia then, comes in with Chewie as one of those headhunters.
Yeah.
And her voice sounds very machine-like. I thought of that when I heard the alien talk. So that was kind of, you know,
So there's a new version of his trailer, as I said, with the blur gone and subtitles. And I have to say, like... Alright, first of all, what do you imagine that conversation is? Like, what do you think the alien is saying?
Alien?
Putting it together. Because he asks him, like, why are you here? I think.
Well, why are you here? Probably says something along the lines of, to smoke you bitches. And then when he says, how do your weapons work? He says, they fuck you up, motherfucker.
I mean, you see, that's the thing. It's the complete opposite.
No, I know.
You know, it's like, why are you here? We had no choice. Our ship, you have our ship, you took our ship. You're like, how do your weapons work? It's not none of your business. We can't help it. It's really interesting when I saw the subtitled version earlier today. I saw it on first showing, right? I'm sure it'll be all over the web by the time I release this episode, but...
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, and if it weren't for YouTube, I'd have my own version on my YouTube page. They sent me a quick email telling me that it's copyrighted and I need to take it down.
Really?
Yeah. Like, so far there are two trailers that they've done that for. It's District 9 and Wolverine, the third trailer for Wolverine. They quickly sent me a shutdown to that trailer telling me that it's copyrighted and I shouldn't have it on my YouTube page.
Okay.
Which I find interesting because the film stage still has their thing on YouTube, District 9, so I don't know how they get away with it.
I think somebody sucked a little... Wait, sorry.
No.
No. Yeah, I don't know. This movie looks interesting. I'd like to watch it. Or I'd like to see more about it.
One thing that becomes evident to me through this trailer is that the humans have sectioned off the aliens into like a slum.
Slumdog Alienaire?
Yeah. Oh. I mean... As opposed to your other alien invasion film, which is that the aliens come in and they kick ass and we are all extinct by the end.
Mm.
You know, this is just throwing everything... But
where do you get that from this trailer?
You hear the Africans talk about how they're spending all this money to keep all these people, but at least they're keeping them separate from us.
When did that happen?
In the trailer.
That I just watched?
Yes. And it's also in the subtitle version where they're talking to the alien. He's saying, what else do you want us to do? You've locked us in this corner of the world.
Yeah, maybe it's going to be something similar to... There was this movie with... Oh my goodness, I can't even remember who was in it. I think it might have been a Carradine boy. Where, like, there was... It was, like, half and half. Half aliens, half humans. And he was partnered up with an alien. And he was a police officer. And they went around doing crap.
Oh, I know which movie you're talking about. I don't remember the name. But, yeah. I haven't seen it. It looks like a cheesy 80s crappy movie.
People like it.
People like lots of shit.
Yeah, people like you. Yeah, people like a lot of shit. I know.
Anyways, let's move on to our second trailer of the night. Our final trailer of the night. Is Julie and Julia.
I'm Julia Child. Bon appetit.
Before she changed the world, Julia Child was just an American living in France.
Shouldn't I find something to do?
What is it that you really like to do?
Eat.
And you're so good at it. Look at you. Now,
they're growing in front of you.
But what does Julia Child have to do with me? Lowly cubicle worker Julie Powell?
So how's your job, Julie?
Are you the person to speak to about my insurance form?
You can speak to me.
Do you have any power?
No.
Heartbreak.
So sad.
Painful.
Not in a bad way.
I don't know.
Do you think I'm lost? Is this lost? If you met me, would you think that woman is lost?
I would think that woman is strangely repetitive.
Did you hear what happened to this one?
Showtime bought my blog for a miniseries.
I could write a blog. I have thoughts.
Write a blog about cooking.
I'm not a real cook like Julia Child.
Julia Child wasn't always Julia Child.
Why don't I go to cooking school?
Bonjour!
The Julie / Julia Project. I cook my way through Julia Child's cookbook. 365 days, 524 recipes. I am risking my well-being for a deranged assignment.
Is it crazy?
Yes.
You should have seen the way those men looked at me.
But then they discovered I was fearless.
Oh, Julia, you make it sound so simple.
Your book is going to change the world.
What if I don't make my deadline? I'll waste it a whole year of my life? I used to be thin, and now I'm fat.
Just your face.
And it's supposed to be a big adventure, but it just turns out to be a lot of meltdowns.
Yeah!
There's all of this stuff on the floor!
Oh, never apologize.
From writer-director Nora Ephron.
This is good.
That is good, isn't it? It's
Meryl Streep, Amy Adams.
I was drowning and she pulled me out of the ocean.
Don't get carried away.
What's for dinner?
What's for dinner?
Mm. Oh my God.
You have no real talent for cooking.
Julie and Julia, based on two true stories.
Very good voice. I love it. Second of all, what the hell? Based on two true stories, that just sounds like double the crap. Double the pleasure, double the crap. I thought about, at first, this movie being wonderful because it teamed up again Meryl Streep and Amy Adams from Doubt, which is a movie that I actually really enjoyed. But this movie looks very odd, very, you know, poppy almost. Popcorn. Not very, you know, good. Well, I could be wrong.
Well, are you saying that popcorn films are not good?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that this looks like a movie where it's very formulaic and the content is not so much good more than it is what they know everybody's going to watch and pay money for.
Do you think this is a movie that would ruin relationships?
Probably, because the guy is probably gonna still stay with Amy Adams, and he shouldn't.
Do you think that this movie is going to make men believe that women need to be in the kitchen?
Probably not, but it should. That's where they belong.
Douglas does not represent humanity in any shape or form.
Come on, Andrew. Small feet, large bellies, you know.
I know. Personally, I love this trailer. I want to see this film. Meryl Streep with her voice, always hilarious. Amy Adams, I'm not looking forward to.
Really?
Really.
What did you think about her in Doubt?
Yeah, didn't really.
I thought she was good. I thought she did as good as she could. Better
Meryl
than
Streep
I
and
expected.
Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman ran that movie. Amy Adams was, you know, Whiffle in comparison.
Whiffle?
Whiffle. Whiffle ball.
Whiffle ball. She got nominated for Best Supporting.
And guess what? She didn't win.
Neither did Rachel getting married.
Well, she wasn't supporting.
But she didn't win. Sorry.
Kate Winslet won it.
That's because she showed her breasts again.
And this time in a war film. No, World War II film.
Yeah, didn't she win for showing her breasts in a PG-13 film?
I can't remember if she won for that. Anyways, we've talked about Kate Winslet's breasts enough on this podcast.
Yes.
But one thing that strikes me about this trailer, which kind of made me want to throw the monitor out the window, was the moment when the girl talks about how she sold her blog to Showtime. And then Amy Adams says, you know, I could write a blog. I have thoughts. You know, kind of making me feel like an idiot.
Why? Because Showtime doesn't want you?
Well, that, yes. But, you know, I have thoughts. Why doesn't anyone want to buy my blog? Yeah.
By the way, in case you're watching or listening to this later on, that was what we call an awkward silence due to the fact that his question, he already knew the answer to.
Anyways, I want to watch this film. Meryl Streep alone, I'm going.
Yeah, I'm not saying I won't want to. It's just the trailer wasn't that great. I didn't think so.
Yeah, so moving on to our main review of the night. Here is Italian mob film Gomorrah. And here's a trailer for those of you who don't know what it is.
Oh.
nostra azienda è in grado di smaltire i rifiuti che la sua fabbrica produce in un anno.
800 tonnellate.
800 tonnellate.
So let's start with you, Douglas. What did you think about this film?
Actually, I didn't think it was that bad. It was very interesting. It was not a story-driven. It had many threads, many different sections of it. Really, what this movie intended, I think, to present was not a story of, you know, revenge or mafia or gangs or whatever. What it wanted to do was to present the situation that these people live in, and how it's characterized by this gang violence, this drug trade, and, you know, how it affects these people. There were very many different characters, some of which interacted with each other, some of which did not. I found it funny that there was at least one guy in sanitation.
And of course there was the Tony Montana crew.
Well, yeah. That's the first thing that we started off with in the movie was, "You're messing with the best. I'm Montana, the world is mine." That was great. Actually, what I have to say is those guys were the best pilots. Those two young, wild children that didn't know what the hell they were doing, but were doing it anyway, were great. I thought that was, I mean, not the most telling part of the movie, not the most gut-wrenching part of the movie, not the tour de force of the movie, but whenever those two came on screen, I said to myself, yes, I'm about to see something cool. Right? So, I enjoyed them for that. But the film, it went through, it showed you certain aspects of, well, first of all, it's all about this town that is divided clearly into two sections, or there are two major gangs that almost run the town, I would say, in the sense that, you know, when things are going down, everybody has to kind of shut her down. But there are these two major gangs. Can't remember what they call themselves. One was like secessionists or something like that. But there were very clear lines drawn between the two. There was no sort of amicable relationship between them. They killed each other and that's what they did. Even if you were associated with somebody from the other side, you were killed. As we see clearly in the film, you see a lot of, you know, children get pulled up into the gang, which was clearly meant to be a heart-wrenching type of thing. You know, you're supposed to look at this probably and say, oh my goodness, look at these 12-year-olds. How could they get into this life so early? And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of, for example, the sanitation guy. His story is interesting. Him and what looks to be maybe his nephew or something like that are running the sanitation business. Not too nicely, not too legally, but they're doing it. Yeah. Well, I thought this movie was decent. I wouldn't give it an A. I don't think I'd give it a B+. Maybe a B, or no, better, a B minus. I'd say watch it if you're... Yeah, you know what? Watch it. You may like it, you may not, but it's not horrible. And it's better than average. I'll give it that. So I'd say it's probably worth a B minus. What did you think?
Alright, one thing I have to say about this movie is I think the story not of the film, but of how the film was made. And not necessarily of how the film was made, I mean the actual, the writer of the film. This started as a book by, I have his name up here, Roberto Saviano. Right?
Hey, wasn't he in the movie? Was he in the movie?
It's a non-fiction story.
Non-fiction, okay.
Right? The book is a non-fiction story. One of the things, I heard about this on the BBC, I heard about this movie from a long time ago via the BBC. They were talking about it with Roberto Saviano, I believe. Because this is a true story. This is real. You know, we always talk about how the mafia is real, this is happening, but this is actual real stories. I don't know what, if there were any things that the movie decided to take out, keep in, whatever, but if the book is out there, if you read it, that is a true story of things that are happening in Naples, in Italy.
Napoli!
Depends on where you're coming from.
That's what they call it.
Yeah, right. Roberto Saviano, he actually was a part of this, right? And when he wrote the book and published it, he actually had to go into hiding, right? The Gomorrah said they were coming after him for outing them for all of their things. And I think they actually put a deadline on his bounty. I don't think he's not dead. He hasn't been found and killed yet by the Gomorrah. But I think the deadline has passed. But the idea that this guy has to go into hiding for all of these... Roberto Saviano, I don't think he's not in the film. Actually, I remember this. Listening to the Film Spotting podcast, they spoke to the director of the film. And they spoke about how they translated from the book to the film. And they decided to take out Saviano because he actually puts himself in the book. But they took him out for the film. I mean, I can't remember specifically if they have like a throwaway moment for Saviano, but generally he's not in the movie. Right.
You know who I liked too, actually, was Don Ciro. But what did Roberto do?
I don't know, I haven't read the book. But you know, he apparently was a part of this, which is why he can talk about it so vividly, and why we have a movie so that takes us into this gritty Italian mafia world where we think The Sopranos is lying, but it's really just a watered-down version of this kind of story. A exaggerated version. I don't know which one to pick. Because it exaggerates his pieces and it waters down the rest. Right? While Gomorrah, it tries to keep it as real as possible. It tries to show us what is really happening. In that you have the standard mafia. You know, the people who pick up the drug deals and the people who count the money in the back of the room and all they do is smoke cigars and play poker. You have the teenagers who want to become Tony Montana and want to take over the world and be their own mafia and screw up the entire of what's going on in Naples. And you have the child who's, you know, not necessarily wanting to be in the mafia, but at the same time, he realizes what his neighborhood is, what his situation is, and he doesn't hide or at the same time pretend that they don't exist.
By the way, did you notice the makeup in one scene?
I didn't.
He put on lipstick, I believe.
I didn't notice that.
And he had on his
hair. Are you talking about the child?
Yes, the child. I'm pretty sure I saw that. And for a second I was like, is that a girl? And he looks like the kid that I've seen already.
He, that child seems to me like someone who's doing it just because it's there. I saw that. Seems to be doing it just because it's there. Just because he knows his older brothers are in the gang, his friends are in the gang. Everyone from this neighborhood ends up going into the Gomorrah, right? And you even see it in the initiation, where all the little children come up and they put on a bulletproof vest, and the guy asks him, "Are you afraid? Are you afraid?" Pointing a gun at him, and then they shoot you in the vest. You know, not to kill you, but just to try and get people used to the idea of being shot at. You know, because if you're going to be a part of the Gomorrah, you're going to have to deal with being shot at or shooting. You know, I mean, these are the kinds of things that I find truly interesting. The movie itself, it feels a little muddled and confused at times. Especially when they're trying to bring together the storylines.
I don't think they do that very well.
Yeah,
I think they still, even in the end, remain as four, maybe five separate stories.
Yeah, and I think it had... I haven't read the book, but maybe one of these days I will. I think it might have to do with the fact that they took Saviano out of the story.
Maybe.
Right, because he is the story, more or less. You know, I suggest this to anyone who's interested in mafia films, who's interested in Italian cinema. But generally, I don't think I'd watch this movie again. It's not something that I'd search out for my Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But, like, what did you think of the standard, the established Gomorrah? How did you think that compared to, like, our usual mafia TV shows, films, like, you know, Sopranos or Goodfellas or stuff that we're used to watching?
I think it was essentially the same, except they kind of showed the more roots aspect of it, the down-to-earth aspect of it. You know, it was clearly shown in very close to the end of the movie when something happened to one of their, you know, they got shot. And I don't know if they got killed or not. Probably killed. I'm not sure. And they try and plot revenge. And they're saying to themselves, you know, a couple of guys are like, no, we can't do this. We haven't got orders. We have to stick to the orders. There are higher-ups that need to figure out what we must do. And then there were guys that were like, no, you know, we have to do things. No, that was our guy. We need to go get this. And you know, you saw the infighting and the sort of mob mentality. And I don't mean mob in the sense of, you know, mob equals mafia. I mean mob as in the singular mentality that you take on when many people come together. And it's very strange how that actually works. It really exists and it does happen. You get into a large crowd and, you know, if something goes down, if something happens, a lot of people will, you know, go with the mob. But yeah, it's funny how, you know, you see that kind of thing play out and they show it and they show, you know, the, I don't want to call it stupid decision making, but the very rash and rushed decision making of people in lower positions in the group, in the gang, based on, you know, revenge and more base feelings than, you know, somebody who would be removed from the situation and would think about it and say, you know, if I were playing chess, if this is a chess game, I would not do this because this would do that. So I think that very much resembled what we have seen in the mafia things that we've been talking, that we've watched, you know, from time began. Some other things, the more gritty aspects of it, yes, maybe you haven't seen very many of those, but I would argue that you kind of have, but maybe you just haven't noticed. I mean, you know me, I'm of the belief that nothing really is 100% original. And no matter how much you try, what you're going to show to me is not a completely original concept, but something more, if it's what most people consider original, it's more of a refinement of somebody else's idea. With maybe, if you're spectacular, a little bit of something of your own.
Which is why I believe in paying attention to the small details more than the general idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you're right in the sense that, you know, this is not something that you normally see. And, you know, it's grit and it's dirtiness and it's almost unrefinement adds to that.
Okay. You said you'd give it a B-, right?
But yeah.
Is there anyone specific who you'd recommend this to?
anyone specific. I'd recommend it to you.
To me?
No, I don't know. That's such an odd question. I don't know who I'd recommend it to.
And then you'd sit down and you'd be like, "Ah, crap, they're hating this movie, aren't they?"
I guess somebody who likes, you know, violent movies and not mob, but gang movies and real, like, real feeling movies. You know, like, this movie felt real. I didn't feel like it was a story. I didn't watch it and said, "Oh, that's a nice little storytelling thing." No, I thought it felt, you know, real. I'd recommend this to the same type of person that like Traffic, you know?
I actually mean to rewatch that movie.
Me too.
Anyways, right, I think this movie is amazing with its own little faults. It has its own little problems. I didn't like how it brought the story together. I didn't like a couple of the characters felt a little brushed over. I'm sure the book fills in the gaps, right? Especially the dressmaker. I thought he wasn't given enough time to show his particular connections and true feelings, yeah, as to why he was doing what he was doing.
But you see, no, I can understand. No, I shouldn't say understand. I can forgive that. Not even forgive. I see why somebody might do that. You know, you're not earning a whole heap of money where you're working, so sure, you need to get some extra money so you do something on the side. But what I don't understand and was never explained to me was why it was a big deal that he was going to the Chinese.
Oops. Yeah.
And
yeah,
why it ended the way it did. Why he,
yeah, that's to, what I'm talking, you know, about, you know? They didn't fully explain his entire relationship and what the problems were with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's one of my problems with the film. But in the end, it's definitely a good movie. I was happy I saw it. It gave me something, a different perspective in the mafia world, which I haven't seen. Right, but is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Not really. No.
Alright, so I think we're just going to end it here. Alright, this is the Unnamed Movie Podcast. Thanks for listening. This is Andrew.
And this is Douglas signing off tonight.
You can get all episodes on gmanreviews.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/gmanreviews. And Douglas?
Of course, I am still at... I don't know what I'm still at. No, my name is DJR. DJR lost his name. And that's, you know, on Twitter.
You can email the podcast at unnamed@gmanreviews.com. You can, you know, comment on the site. You know, you can find us on iTunes. Search for G-Man Reviews. You'll find the podcast.
We're also on, what is it, Podcast Alley?
The Podcast Alley. Yeah. You know, you can search for us there.
Give us good reviews.
Yeah, we like those. Or at least tell us something useful.
Yeah, tell us, you know, Andrew needs to go.
Anyways, next week we'll be talking about David Mamet, and we'll be reviewing...
I have to watch David Mamet films. Ooh, I forget.
We'll be talking about David Mamet, and we'll be reviewing Hedwig and the Angry Inch. So, tune in next week. We broadcast live on Ustream Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Bye. La nostra storia sembra scritta da un cartone alla TV. Tu ragazzina innamorata, ma viziata un po' di più. Con i tuoi sogni nel cassetto, mi ripeti molto spesso, cagumi buramizza. Troppo gelosa, ma ti giuro che mi piaci come sei. Sintonizzata a questo amore, fino al 3003. Io che ti amo d'amore.